Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. Welcome to our weekly Parsha Shiur. A pleasure to welcome Rabbi Yossi Levine, who is the rabbi of the Jewish Center in Manhattan. He has worked his way up the ranks. He began as the rabbinic intern, assistant rabbi, associate rabbi, and now the senior rabbi. He's been in the shul already for many years, and it's really a pleasure to welcome him. He has a PhD in on the Chacham Tzvi, which I very, very fascinating person from YU. He's a graduate of Columbia. He's a Wexner Fellow, and he's one of the leaders of the Jewish community in New York, which I guess is the largest Jewish community in the world. Even though Yerushalayim and Israel may be the most important, still New York is still the largest in the world. So it's a pleasure to welcome you to Torah Motion. Bakashat, it's all yours.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kelman. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to do a little learning with you this evening. And thank you for everything that you've done to create this extraordinary program, which disseminates Torah to thousands and tens of thousands of people the world over. It's an extraordinary Kiddush Hashem, and we're all very grateful. Also want to just take a moment to acknowledge the wonderful Jewish Center members who are on the call, and extra points for those who are sharing their screens so that we have a chance to see each other, if not in person, then at least to be able to relate to each other visually, which is always great. Just a couple of logistical points before I jump in. Everyone should have access to the source sheet. It went around in the email. It's on the website, and you have it in the chat. You should be able to bring it up. My personal preference is to share the screen a little less so that we can see each other a little more. But over the course of the shiur, I will use the share screen to make sure everyone is, you know, quite literally on the same page. But if you have it, I'll be referring to the source sheet. The chat is open if anyone would like to ask questions. I'll either pause over the course of the time together, or we'll leave some time at the end to entertain questions. Of course, if we were in person, it would be interactive, and I would love to learn from the wisdom of this group more fully. So we'll have to reserve an opportunity to do that after the pandemic is over, and certainly over in Canada. I don't know what the weather is where everyone is, but I can say here in New York City, this has been an exceptionally hot week. And I was just reminded of the Frenchman, the German, and the Jew who are traveling through the desert in the sweltering heat. And the Frenchman says, I'm so hot, I'm so tired, I must have a glass of wine. And the German says, I'm so hot, I'm so tired, I must have a glass of beer. And the Jew says, I'm so hot, I'm so tired, I must have diabetes. So, you know, hopefully everyone is managing the heat, okay. But I just use that as a segue to return with you to one of the chronologically last episodes that takes place in the sweltering heat of the Midbar, in the 40th year of the desert. So if you have the source sheet, I would invite you to open it to source number one, or if you have a Chumash handy, this is Perek Chav Zayin. What I'd like to do is return with you to a relatively well-known episode in Parshas Pinchas, the story of the daughters, the five daughters of Tzelafchad. I'd like to do a close reading of the psukim where we learn the ikar of the story, the centerpiece of the story. It's a short text. I want to kind of make some trouble, ask some questions about what's happening in the text, and then I want to study a few sources with you that I hope will shed some light on what might be going on here. Not obscure sources, classic sources, sources from the Medrash and the Gemara and the commentaries to the Torah, and hopefully make an argument that will be compelling. So let's jump right in. Again, source number one in the source sheet, this is the very beginning of Perek Chav Zayin, as it's the source, first source on the sheet. I'll put it up on the screen. Okay, so here we are. We're in the desert, and the Torah tells us that Yikravna Manos Lavchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe leMishpachos Menashe ben Yosef, the Elish Mos ben Osav Machla Noah v'Chaga u'Milka v'Tirtza. Okay, so these five daughters of Tzelafchad approach. Okay, they draw near. So the first question that I want to ask is, who cares about their lineage? there are five people and we need to know their names. And we need to know who their father is, but to give me their lineage all the way back to Menashe, all the way back to Yosef. Question number one, why do we have the very detailed lineage of these five women? But Tamod lo lifnei Moshe, ve'lifnei Elazar hakohen, ve'lifnei ha'nisiyim, v'chol heida pesach amalei lengwa. Now, I think you could kind of read the pasuk quickly and just think like, oh, they showed up in the camp. But this pasuk is just flooring. I'm floored by this formulation. Who did they get an audience with? They had an audience with Moshe Rabbeinu, Elazar, he's the Kohen Gadol. Remember, Aaron has passed away. Elazar is the heir. We'll talk more about that in a minute. They have an audience with Moshe, with Elazar, Lifnei HaNesiim, okay, that's the heads of every tribe, the Chol Eida, and by the way, the entirety of the nation, Pesach Olam Moed, right at the entrance to the tent of the meeting, to the Mishkan. Question number two, what are we to make of the fact that they have an audience with the entirety of leadership and membership of the Jewish people? Pasuk Gimel. Avinu meis bamidbar, v'hu lo haya besoch Eida, no adim al Hashem ba'ad haskarach, ki bechet o meis, uvanim lo hayu lo. So now they tell their story and they give their background. They say, you know, our father died in the wilderness. And we just want to let you know that he wasn't part of the Korach Chevra. You know, the Korach, the rebellion, and they were swallowed and there was a fire. He wasn't part of that whole story. Okay, Bechetz El Meis, he died on account of his own sin. And Ubanim Lo Hayulo, he had no sons. Now, we could understand, because we know the story, the fact that he has no sons, he has no heirs, we're worried. So we understand what that's doing here. But what about the rest of this? What about the rest of this pasuk? The fact that he wasn't in the Korach rebellion, he died with his own sin. Why does that matter? Right? Why should we care specifically? How many people died in the Korach rebellion? If I counted correctly, 253. I think that's the number. So he wasn't, as a minority of a minority, you were part of that group. He wasn't part of that group. Why would I have thought he's part of that group? Question number three, what's the meaning of not being part of Korach? Vayakrev Moshe es mishpatan lifnei Hashem. Moshe brings before Hashem their case. Okay. Brings before Hashem their case. And then we'll just go through quickly. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe l'imor. Kein beno slavcha davros nasam titem achuzas nachala besoch achay avihem v'havarta es nachalas avihen lahem. And Hashem says, you know, they're right. They got it right. You should give them the nachala that belongs to their father, and it's going to pass. It's going to pass from their father to them. Which again, there's no precedent for this before because we haven't had a case where father had no sons, only daughters. This is all news. And then the Torah goes on. V'el bnei Yisrael tadaber lemor ish kiamusu veining lo v'artem es nachlaso levito. That's the halacha. That's the new rule. That's the new law that everyone should know about. You got to know that in the absence of sons, daughters are going to inherit. So I want to think about some of these questions as clues, and I want to come back to them gradually to think about how they might inform what the Torah is arguing here. But before we do that, I want to zoom out and place things in a broader context, because my argument is that the story of Tzolofchad and the daughters of Tzolofchad can only be properly understood, can only be properly appreciated within the grand sweep of the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar, and specifically the part of Bamidbar where we find ourselves in these parshios, particularly Chukas, Balak, Pinchas. Now, in Perek Chaf, the very beginning of Perek Chaf, this is source number two, and I'll put it back on the source sheet. There's a kind of innocuous pasuk, and we just read it quickly. We don't pay that much attention. It says, "Vayavo bnei Yisrael kol eidam midbartzin b'chodesh harishon, v'yeshev ha'am b'kadesh v'tamas shamiriam v'tika b'ersham." And what happens when we read a pasuk like this is we focus on the real meat and potatoes. It's the death of Miriam, right? This is a very important pasuk. And we focus at the end of the pasuk because that's what you know, the narrative is about, that's what the story is about, that's what grabs our attention. And we kind of don't pay any attention to the details of the, you know, the Jewish people came and they were in a place called Sin. And we don't really know the geography of the desert anyway. So what does it matter where Sin is? And it was B'chodesh HaRishon, it happens to be in the month of Nisan. Okay, that doesn't move us that much either. And they're living in a place temporarily called Kadesh. Why does any of it matter? What matters here is something that Rashi points out, which is fundamental to understanding everything that's about to follow. It's one very crucial detail. Rashi writes, he says, Kol Haida. Notice that, again, we didn't even bother translating it because it's so obvious. What are you going to tell me that only half the Jewish people made it to this part of the... No, they're traveling as a group. It's the whole community. It's the whole nation. They obviously all came, but it's a puzzle. If that's so obvious, then why would the Torah go out of its way to say Kol Haida? Of course it's Kol Haida. So Rashi says, no, this is very important. This is telling us something that we otherwise might have missed. Kol Haida, Eida Hashlema, Shkvar Mesu Mesei Misbar Ve'elu Per Shulachai. Rashi says, this is a fundamental moment of transition in the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar. Up until now, we've been in the first 2 years of the story. Everything that happened in that first year and a half after the Exodus. Suddenly, the Torah has fast-forwarded, and everything that follows is now year 40, because the 39 intervening years were the years in which the Dor HaMidbar has perished as a result of the punishment that followed on the heels of the sin of the spies. That punishment has played out. It's over. The generation that was responsible for the sin of the spies has died. What remains is the next generation in its entirety. This is the generation that's going to enter the promised land. This is the generation that's going to enter the land of Israel. Okay. So with that in mind, we have to start to recognize one of the important issues that the Torah takes up at this time, and some of it is actually quite easy to spot, and it's totally intuitive, because if the previous generation has died out, and we're now right at the precipice, right at the cusp of entering the land of Israel. In year 40, it's just a matter of months before we're going to cross the Jordan and go into the promised land. So we need to know who's going to lead the Jewish people. And this question of leadership and who are the heirs to the roles of leadership is looming very, very large. I'll just say as a parenthesis, right, this is an issue that looms large through the whole second half of Sefer Bereishis, right? We know that the heir to Abraham is Yitzchak, and the heir to Yitzchak is Yaakov. Who's going to be the heir to Yaakov? There's not an obvious choice, right? It's not it's Yitzchak, Yishmael. That was obvious, Yaakov, that was obvious. When it comes to the 12 tribes, well, who's it going to be? Is it Reuven? Is it Shimon? Is it Yehuda? Is it Levi? Is it Yosef? You can make a strong argument for any of them, and you get these kind of clues as to why one might be entertained and why another might be disqualified. It's looming because we need to know, as the story is going to progress, who's going to lead us. And that same phenomenon is happening at this moment in the story of Sefer Bamidbar. Okay, so the first question that comes up is the question of the kahuna. There's only been one Kohen Gadol this whole time. There's one person, right? Other than maybe Moshe doing the avodah at the beginning. It's Aaron. It's Aaron a Kohen. That's his whole identity. So, you know, we now take for granted that that a son of a Kohen is a Kohen, but that's not obvious. It wasn't obvious in the times of the Midbar, and it wasn't the original plan, right? Remember, the original plan was for every Bechor of every family to serve in the Midbar, nothing to do with who your father was per se, right? It just depended on where you shook out in your family. So the fact that a son would, that's already a novel argument. But that's the first model that the Torah introduces us to. I won't put it on the source sheet, but you have it in source number four. Remember the story? This is right after the story of Miriam's passing. You have Aaron's passing in Chukas. So Perek Chaf Pasuk Chaf Gimel VaYomer Hashem Al Moshe VeYal Aaron VeHor Ahar Al Gvul Eretz Edom LeMor. Hashem commands Moshe and Aaron on this place called Hor Ahar. He says the following: Yesef Aaron Elamav. Aaron is about to be gathered unto his people. Biblical idiom: Aaron is about to die. Ki lo yavo al haaretz. He's not going to enter the land. Asher nasati l'bnei Yisrael asher merisa nespi l'mei meriva. You know the story, right? At the Mei Meriva, at the rock, lost his chance. He's not going to enter the land. Well, if he's not going to enter the land, someone's got to fill those shoes. Kachas Aaron ves Elazar b'no, v'halo sam horah. So Hashem says to Moshe, there's going to be a process. There's going to be a transfer of power. And I need you to take Aaron and his son Elazar, take them to the top of the mountain. V'hav sheit es Aaron es begadav. This is, you could say, the literal case of passing the mantle. You're going to take the clothes off of Aaron. A Kohen is defined by his special begadim. The Kohen Gadol is defined by his special raiments. Take Aaron's clothes off. V'hil bishtamis Elazar beno. Dress Elazar, his son, in those clothes. The Aaron yaseifu meisham. Aaron will die, and it'll be instantaneous. There won't be a moment where the Jewish people will be without a Kohen Gadol. Aaron will be the Kohen Gadol until he dies. The moment he dies, Elazar will be ready and waiting, and he will take the reins and become the next Kohen Gadol. Model number one for how to transfer leadership in the Midbar at this time, you could call it the model of the son inheriting the father. It's very simple and it's very straightforward. Let me jump ahead. This is actually a series of psukim that comes right on the heels of the narrative of Tzelafchad that we're looking at. It's not our topic exactly for tonight, but it's going to be important for us. And I want to take you to Perek Chaf Zayin Pasuk Tesvav. This is source number five on your sheets. Okay. Moshe is also thinking about leadership. And Moshe is also thinking about who is going to succeed him. There has to be a plan for succession. Vayedaber Moshe al Hashem lemor. And in this case, it starts with the opposite. It's not Hashem coming to Moshe. It's Moshe coming to Hashem. Please, he says, Yifkod Hashem elokei ruchos l'chobosar ish al hayda. You need to appoint someone to lead this people. Asher yitzei lifnehem, v'asher yavo lifnehem, v'asher yotziem, v'asher yiyen. V'lo siyadas yeh katzon asher ein lahem ruet. You can't leave the people like a flock of sheep without a shepherd. They need someone to head. And what does Hashem say? V'yomer Hashem kach l'chas Yoshua binun ish asher ruach po v'samach tes yad chalav. You know who it's going to be? It's going to be Yehoshua. And we'll all have a whole ceremony. You'll place your hand on him. You'll give him smicha, and he will succeed you. Okay. And I'll just point out an important Rashi that you have in source number six. If you look at the second half of that Rashi says something quite amazing. He says, Ash Amar Higiasha She'et Batzarki. Moshe's been a public servant, communal servant for 40 years. It's coming to the end. And he's never asked for anything. He says to Dasan and Aviram, you know, back in Parshas Korach, I never took a penny, I never took any. Right. Just Kulo LaHashem, devoted himself entirely to the cause of the Jewish people, never took anything for himself. Rashi says, finally, at the very end of his life, he says, you know, the time has come, I'm going to ask for something personal. What does he ask for? Sheyirshu banai eskidulasi. You know what my request is, Hashem? This is Rashi putting words into Moshe's mouth based on the Medrash, based on the Gemara. Rashi says, Moshe said to Hashem, I would like to put in a request that my sons inherit the mantle of leadership for me and lead the Jewish people in the next generation. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo kach alsa b'machshava lefanai. Hashem says, sorry, that's not my plan. I don't have that plan. I have a different idea. Kedai hu Yoshua litol schar shimusho shelo mash mitzocha ohel. You know who's going to be the next? It's going to be Yehoshua, and I'll tell you why. Because he earned it. He deserved it. He waited on you hand and foot. He was your right-hand man all this time. He was your protege. And as a function of his having put in the time and the hours, he's earned the right to be your successor. Bezerusha Amar Shlomo, he quotes the famous pasuk in Mishlei, Notzer Teina Yochal Piria. Right? Who eats the fruits of the fig tree? Right? The one who keeps the tree, the one who tends to the tree. So you can't just expect. We never heard of that. Right? Tell me something. Tell me a story about Moshe's kids from the Torah. We know their names. We know nothing else about them. They're absent. They have no leadership. We know they didn't do it. So if they didn't do it, they can't inherit. In which case, the Torah is introducing to us a second model of leadership. There's a whole midrashic literature about how Moshe was, in a healthy way, jealous of his brother at the end, because his brother died this beautiful, peaceful death in which he got to bequeath his leadership to his own children. And Moshe was dreaming of that same kind of succession. And Hashem says, it's not going to happen. It's going to be Yehoshua. Model number one of succession is the son inherits the father. Model number two for succession is what you might call initiation. It's not the son who inherits the position of the father, it's the student. And intuitively makes perfect sense, right? Maybe it even makes more sense, right? The child may or may not have the talent or the know-how or the qualifications to fill the shoes of the parent. That's a crapshoot. You know, you look at monarchy, it could go either way. The student at least has been trained, mentored, qualified to pick up the mantle of leadership. So with this in mind, there's a problem. And the problem is there's a gap in the narrative, because there are three great leaders of the Dor HaMidbar: Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. I'll just share with you, I'll put it up on the screen, a beautiful Gemara, which we all kind of know from one context or another. It's source number 7 on your source sheets. The Gemara is quite explicit about this. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Shlosha Parnasim Tovim Amdu Yisrael. There were three great shepherds, three great leaders of the Jewish people who arose. Eluhen, who are they? Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. V'gimel matanos tovos nitnu al yadam. And there were three gifts that were given to the Jewish people in their merit. V'eluhen, and what are the three gifts? Be'er, v'anan, be'er, v'anan, uman. The well of water that followed the Jewish people throughout their years in the wilderness so that they would have what to drink. The anan, the clouds of glory that protected them and gave them shade. Uman, and the manna from heaven that sustained them. How did it work out? Be'er b'schus Miriam, we'll circle back to that soon. The well was in the merit of Miriam. Amud anan b'schus Aaron. The clouds of glory were in the merit of Aaron. Man b'schus Moshe, and the man came in the merit of Moshe. And then, upon the death of each leader, their corresponding miracle ceased. Mesa Miriam nistalka ha-be'er. And then the Gemara goes up. So my point in bringing this up is that if we know how Moshe's leadership is transferred, and we know how Aaron's leadership is transferred, then there must be some clue in the Torah about how Miriam's leadership and the qualities that she brought, which are maybe symbolized by the Be'er. So who inherits them in the next generation? So I've already telegraphed the answer, but I want to show it to you as it develops. I want to study with you. This is maybe the only source on the sheet tonight that is a little less known and maybe a drop more obscure, even though it's a Sifrei, right? It's from a classic collection of Midrashim. want to study this this medrash with you carefully. This is source number 8. The medrash writes the following: "Batikravna benos slavchat." And here we'll start to piece together the argument that I want to share with you. So the daughters of Tzalavchad approached. Kevan sheshamu b'no Tzalavchad she'aretz mischalekes l'shvatim l'zecharim v'lo l'nekevos. Once they heard, once they got wind of the fact that the land was destined to be divided according to males in the tribes and not according to the females, not according to the women, niskaptu kulan zu alzu l'toleitza. So they got together and they had a family meeting, and they decided to devise a plan, to devise a strategy. That's why whenever you see the Bnei Tzalavchad, they're always working together, and they're always exactly on the same page, right? It's never, you know, one speaking. They're always front and center as a group. And what did they decide? What was the big conclusion that emerged from their family meeting? Amru, they said, lo kirachame basar adam rachame hamakom. This is, you know, the orientation of human beings is different than the orientation of Hashem. Here's why. Lo kirachame basar v'dam rachame amakum. Basar v'dam rachamav al zecharim yoser min hanakevos. This is amazing. This is, you know, like a 2,000-year-old medrash. It's as contemporary as if it were written yesterday. So they come together and they say, you know, look, people are prejudiced. People are sexist, and they tend to have, you know, a greater affinity for or more compassion toward men. That's just the, you know, how human beings function. Aval misha amar v'yahalam ain okay. But Hashem, the Creator, whom we're supposed to imitate, he doesn't function that way. He doesn't play favorites. Ela rachamav al hazacharim v'al hanakevos. Rachamav al hakol. There's no prejudice. There's no discrimination. There's not men before women, women before. It doesn't work that way. In the eyes of Hashem, he is rachamav al hazacharim v'al hanakevos. Rachamav al hakol. His compassion is dispensed in equal measure, irrespective of whether a person happens to be male or female. It's just not relevant. Shenemar, based on the pasuk that we say 3 times every day in Ashrei, Tov Hashem l'chol v'rachamav al kol ma'asav. Hashem is good to everyone and shows compassion to all of his creations. Okay. Now, this is an amazing text on many levels. I just want to zoom in on one. These 5 women of the Bnei Tzalavchad freely recognize that left to their own devices, human beings may have prejudices, human beings may leave people behind, right? Which is what they're saying. You're going to go into the land and our family and us women, we're going to be left behind. We're not going to be included. You're going to leave us out. But they also recognize that in an objective world, in the eyes of Hashem, there's no room for prejudice, and no one can get left behind. That's not how it's supposed to be. What I want to argue is that Benos Slavchad pick up where Miriam leaves off. It's not just that she was a model of women leadership, and you know, these are women leaders. Of course, that's true, and that point shouldn't be lost on us. But there's something much, much more. And I want to see if I can break it open with you in the time that we have remaining. What is Miriam's great contribution in the Torah? What I want to argue, and maybe this is the most important thing that I want to leave you with, what I want to argue is that Miriam had a knack for bringing people together. And really, and I challenge you to find an exception to this, pretty much every time we meet Miriam in the Torah, she is bringing people together. Okay, it starts way back, and then we'll circle back to the Bnei Tzalavchad, and we'll tie all the pieces together. So follow me, if you will, on this tangent to learn a little bit about Miriam so that we can understand how the Bnei Tzalavchad are Miriam's spiritual heirs. come back with me, if you will, to the very beginning of Sefer Shmos. It's a beautiful medrash. Actually, before we get to the medrash, let me share just the even more basic source, right? Which you don't need a medrash for. This is the text itself. And then we'll jump to the medrash. This is source number 9 on your sheets. You know it well. It's the story of Moshe's birth and the story of how Moshe's mother decided to hide him right at the beginning of Sefer Shmos, Perek Beis. We'll just do it quickly, okay? V'yelech ish mi beis Levi bekachas bas Levi. Okay, a woman from the house of Levi married a man from the house of Levi married a woman from the house of Levi. V'tar isha v'tei leben v'tei aso ki tova titzpenei u'shlo shla yirachim. They hide the baby for 3 months. V'lo yachla od hitzpeno. She can't hide the baby any longer. V'tikach lo tei vas gome v'tachmar b'chei ma'a v'zafes v'tasim vas yele v'tasim v'suf vas fasi ur. And she puts him in the basket at the banks of the river. And who's in charge of looking out for this defenseless little 3-month-old baby? The baby's big sister, Miriam. Introduction to Miriam. And what happens? The baby gets discovered. She takes the basket. She's got the basket. She opens it up. She finds this baby. The baby's crying. She has compassion. And she says, ah, this must be a Jewish baby from the Israelites. And who's Johnny on the spot? Okay, the story could have gone in a whole bunch of different directions from this moment. Miriam steps up, but Telmer Achoso El Basparo, right? How much gumption did she have to go to the princess, to the daughter of Paro, and say, I have a whole plan for you. You know what I can do? I can find a Hebrew woman who can nurse the baby. How about it? And what does Miriam do? She reunites baby Moshe with his mother. Okay, exhibit 1, Miriam as the great uniter and reuniter. Exhibit 2, okay, this is the Medrash, or here I have it in the Gemara, in source number 10. And again, you know this, but it's amazing just to see it in this context. So the pasuk we just had, the Gemara picks up and says, "Vayelach ish mibeis Levi." That's a funny formulation. A man from the house of Levi went. Well, lahechan halach. Where did he go? So Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Zvina shalach ba'atzas bito. You know what it means? It means he went. He followed. We would say idiomatically in English. He followed the. What did he follow? He followed the advice of his daughter. Who's his daughter? He followed the advice of Miriam. What's the story? Again, we learn this in first grade, but it's so powerful to think of what the Gemara is doing with the character of Miriam and how it all fits so beautifully together. So this wasn't Aaron's idea. Why didn't he think of it? No, it's not Aaron. It's Miriam, because that's what she's responsible for. What does she say? Tana Amram Gadol Ador Haya, Kevan Shirash Amar Para Rasha Kol Ben Eilun Haya Ora Tashlichu Amar L'Shavanu Amelim. So once he heard the decree, he was the God of Ador, he was the leader of the generation. Once he heard the decree that Paro had said, you know, we're going to have to kill all the male children. So he said, I give up. What's the point? So if we're going to have children, they're going to be murdered. I'm not doing it. So Amad v'girish es ishto. He divorced his wife. Amdu kulan v'girshu es nishasam. Everyone followed. That's what the leader of the Jewish people is doing. We'll all follow the model. Amra laubito. Who steps forward? Miriam. And she says, Abba, Dad, kasha gzeras chayosem mishal paro. What you're doing is worse than paro. Sheparo lo gazer el azacharim v'ata gazart el azacharim v'alan akevos. Paro is only about the boys. What you're doing is preventing the birth of boys and girls. Paro's decree was only about this world. What you're doing has consequences on a cosmic level in this world and in the next world. Paro, harasha safek miskayemes, gzera sav safek eno miskayemes. know, king makes a decree. We don't know how it's going to shake out in reality. Maybe it'll be executed. Maybe it won't be executed. Atat tzadik bevadai shegzeras tamis kayemes. But you're a tzaddik. What you do will certainly come to fruition if you make a decision and everyone decides to follow. So the Medrash concludes, Vayakam lach amad v'chziras ishto amdu kulan v'chziranis nishasem. He went back, got together with his wife. Everyone got back together with their wives. We know the rest of the story. Exhibit number two, Miriam bringing people together. She reunites her parents. Exhibit number three, source number 11. In the interest of time, we won't go through the whole story, but you know it well. After Yom Suf, batikach Miriam and Nebiyah achos Aaron es hatof biyadav etzitzei kol hanashim achareya betuvim u'mecholos. The men saying with Moshe as Yashir, Miriam gathers all of the women. She brings everyone together in song after the miracle of Yom Suf, exhibit number three. And finally, exhibit number four, this one we can look at inside because it's a little subtler and a little easier to miss. Remember the story, it's actually a story that we think of in an unfavorable light. The story of Miriam and the Lashon Hara that she told about her brother Moshe. So let's just look at it, revisit it for one second, and you'll see that at least according to Rashi's understanding of what's happening in that story, it was the same phenomenon. It was just Miriam doing her thing, getting people back together. Source number 12. But tzedaber Miriam be'aron Moshe alo dos ha'isha kushis asher lakach ki isha kushis lakach. Strange pasuk. Okay, we could spend the whole shiur just on this pasuk. But Miriam and Aaron were talking, and what were they talking about? Al odos ha'isha kushis. They were talking about the story of this Cushite woman. So, if you look at source number 13. So again, in the interest of time, I'll just focus on the salient part. She overheard Zipporah's reaction to other Nevi'im when they were appointed. And Zipporah said, I feel bad for them because I know what it's like to be married for a Navi. I feel bad for their wives. If they're Nevi'im, they're going to have to separate from their wives as well. She thought all Nevi'im functioned like Moshe Rabbeinu. So the second to last line in source number 13, Umisham yada Miriam vihigida la'aron. Miriam had overheard, and this is what she communicated to Aaron. Ma Miriam shalom yiskab l'gnusu kain kafna en sha kavachomer l'msaper gnusa shal chaveru. So Rashi moralizes at the end. She says, you know, Miriam didn't intend this for any untoward purpose. Her motives were pure. So kal v'chomer, how much worse is someone, you know, prattles and says something they shouldn't say with something less than pure motivation. But what Rashi also alludes to is the fact that Miriam's motivations were salutary. Al-Odos Ha'isha, Al-Odos Gerushea, what were they talking about? They were talking about the fact that Moshe had separated from his wife, and Miriam was dreaming of the possibility that she could reunite them. That, you know, and this is the whole continuation of the story. Again, you'll look at it more in Parshas Balosha when you have a chance. But this was Miriam's argument. I'm a Nevi'ah. I'm not separated from my husband. You know, my brother Aaron, he's a Navi. He's not separated from his wife. So why is Moshe different? And then, there's an answer to that question, right? That Moshe is sui generis and he doesn't play by the normal rules. And that was once in a generation and maybe once in Jewish history. But the point is, Miriam's failure was just to recognize that Moshe was sui generis. This was, again, just Miriam in character attempting, as she always does, to bring people who might otherwise be separate back together. And of course, I'll just say in a sort of nutshell, symbolically,
this is all captured by the line we saw in the Gemara. What was the gift that the Jewish people received in the merit of Miriam? The Be'er, the well of water. Right? Whenever there's a Be'er in the Torah, and think of all the examples. What happens at the Be'er? It's the watering hole. Right? It's the contemporary water cooler. I don't know if we have water coolers anymore in a post-COVID world, because I don't know if we have offices. But in principle, right, the place where you get water is the place where everyone comes together. So, of course, Miriam is symbolized by the Be'er because she's always bringing everyone together. Now I want to tie together some of our loose ends. I'll try to wrap things up and leave a little time at the end for some questions and discussion. What I want to argue is that both locally and globally, this is exactly what Benos Slavchad do as well. Go back for one moment to, this is one of our questions, go back to source number one. Okay. This was the second pasuk that we looked at, the very beginning of this section. The grievance brought by the Benos Slavchad is brought to whom? Vatamoda lifnei Moshe, lifnei Elazar HaKohen, lifnei Nisim, b'chol Eidah, Pesach HaMoed Lemor. I'm not aware of another time where we have this phenomenon. Who has this capacity? She has an audience with everyone. They're all there. The entire leadership and the entire membership of the Jewish people. Who else could pull this off, right? This is a Miriam trick. To be able to pull together the entirety of the Jewish people, that's the first thing we learn about the Benos Slavchad, is that they bring everyone in the camp. They bring everyone in the camp together. Okay. And it fits perfectly. If their goal, remember the Medrash, if their goal is to ensure that no one gets left out, right? What better strategy than to make that point explicitly in front of the leadership and membership of the entire Jewish people, right? The medium is the message. Everyone's here. We don't leave people out. Everyone is going into the land, so don't discriminate against us because we happen to be of a different gender. No, there's one Jewish people, and we all have a share in the promised land. Maybe that's what they mean when they go out of their way to say that their father wasn't part of Adas Karach. Who cares, right? He died, whatever. There's no male children in our family. There's no father in our family. Right? Whatever the story is, why do they have to mention Karach? They mention Karach because they want to know, they want everyone listening to know, that our father wasn't a person who sowed division, right? Korach is the epitome, he's the paradigm, he represents machlokes, right? That's what the Mishnah in Avos says, machlokes lo l'shem shamayim, shelo l'shem, right? That's Korach, he's the whole personification of division, discord, debate, and fracture. So they start by saying, that's not us, that wasn't him. We're not part of that Masorah. He died for his own sin. I'll just say, by the way, parenthetically, so the Gemara has a debate. What was his sin? Two possibilities. Either he was the Mekoshesh, he was the wood gatherer, or he was from the Mapilim. So what's the Mekoshesh? So Tosfos actually writes, this is the Mekoshesh, the wood gatherer. So the Mekoshesh violated Shabbos, and as a result, he was put to death. Tosfos says he did it intentionally, right? He wanted people to know that the punishment for violating Shabbos is a real thing, and you have to keep the mitzvos, and if there's any backsliding, right, there's a severe punishment. He gave himself up, right, for the greater good. And the Mapilim, right, the Mapilim too, were those who tried, right? It was the wrong move, but they said, you told us that as a result of the Meraglim, as a result of the spies, we can't go into the promised land. It's going to be 40 years. They said, no, we're sorry. We didn't mean it. We love the land. Let's go right now. And they rushed in and they were cut down because it wasn't the right time, but it was the right thought that no, we really do love the Lord. Okay, that's the end parentheses. I should have started the parentheses so I could end them. But the possibilities of who Zelophehad was, point being, he wasn't from Adas Korach, because we're here to bring people together. Korach was the person who broke people apart. The last question that we have unanswered is the first question with which we began, which is, Vatikrav ben Zelophehad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Masheh ben Mishpachas Menasheh ben Yosef. Why do we need that whole story, the whole family tree dating all the way back to Menasheh and Yosef? A lot of the classic commentators say, you know, Zionism, right, in a different anachronistic way. Yosef is the great lover of the land. Pakod, Yivkod, Hashem's going to remember me, take my bones and bury me in the promised land. Always keep your eye on the prize. We're going to go into that land. Never. So they're linking themselves to the promised land, right? Of course, that's one classic approach. What I want to argue is something slightly different, right? Which is, who's Yosef in Sefer Bereishis? Yosef is the great unifier. Whether or not he reconciles with his brothers, or we could debate, maybe he does. But at the very least, and this is undebatable, he reunifies his entire family. They had been apart geographically and ideologically, and now they're all back together, right? The father and the sons and their families and 70, so they're all there. Yosef is the great unifier, so Beno Slavchon would say, that's us. That's our persona. That's our great-grandfather. We're from Yosef because we want to make sure no one gets left out. I'll say, and I can't prove this, but this is a working theory too. What's the relevance of Menasheh? It's not just Yosef, but why mention Menasheh? What happens, or we're going to see this in the upcoming chapters at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, what happens to the tribe of Menasheh? This doesn't happen to anyone else. So there's two tribes that come and say, we want to settle in Transjordan. Right? Who are those two tribes? Reuven and Gad. And the other 10 tribes, they're ready to go into Israel proper. The very end of the negotiation, the story of Reuven and Gad, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Torah mentions, and Moshe gave to Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menasheh these lands in Transjordan. Half the tribe of Menasheh, they didn't ask to be in Transjordan. They were never in the story. Where did that come from? That's totally out of nowhere. So it's possible, and this is a little speculative, but it would make perfect sense. Moshe needed, right, and some of the commentators do say this in other contexts, Moshe needed to be sure that the Jews living in Transjordan weren't isolated from the rest of the nation. So he needed to do something to keep them unified. And if you put half of a tribe in one half of the river and the other half on the other, they're going to keep their family connections and they'll keep everyone connected. Why choose Menasheh? Because Menasheh has this quality of keeping people connected and keeping people together. Okay. So what I've tried to argue is that the Torah wants us to think about inheritance and succession at this transition moment in year 40, in these days, weeks, and months before the Jewish people transition and enter the promised land under the promise of a new generation of leadership. So there's three models. You could be a Lazar, you could inherit the leadership. You could be Yoshua, through study and mentorship, you could be a Jewish leader. Or you could be Beno Slavchad. You don't have to be the child of a great Jewish leader. You don't even have to be the student of a great Jewish leader. You can model greatness all your own, and you can rewrite the story in the process. And this is the last thing I want to say before I open it up to the chat and maybe some questions. Remember how the story began? Vatikravna b'no Slavchad. And this is actually amazing to notice. I'll just put it on the screen so you can see it and don't have to take more my word for it. The story begins, Vatikravna. They approached, they initiated, they came of their own accord. What response does that generate on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu? Not aware of any other pasuk in the Torah where we have this formulation. Vayakred Moshe es mishpatan lifnei Hashem. The the capacity to initiate, right, on the part of the Bnei Slavchad, the capacity that they modeled is now reciprocated and mirrored back by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Right? That's the third model. You don't have to inherit it from the father. You don't have to be mentored by the previous leader. You could just stand up. You don't have to wait to be called upon. You just find your own models and initiate. That's the whole idea. You could be born into it, you could be trained to do it, or you could find your own models and initiate leadership by yourself. If you do that, you can change the whole course of Jewish history. I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to open up the floor to some comments and questions I see in the chat. Here's a question: is Pinchas a tikkun for Aaron, who didn't act quickly or decisively ari the sin of the golden calf, but Pinchas does? Okay, that's fascinating. Look, Pinchas does pick up the mantle of leadership at a moment when others were more passive. I didn't see anyone say that there's a tikkun there, but I think there's something something certainly noticeable. And the whole, you know, as a descendant, as a grandson of Aaron and the Brith Shalom, and of course Aaron is the Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. There's a lot of connections between Aaron and Pinchas, and maybe there's something worth exploring there. Okay, how do you interpret her Lashon Hara as an attempt to get Moshe and Tzipora together? Yes, so maybe that question came in before I explicated the rest of the story. But yes, meaning the point of Miriam was a kind of, you know, Aveira Lishma, or maybe she wouldn't have thought of it as an Aveira, but she was telling this story in the hopes of bringing Moshe back into relationship with Tzipora, who, you know, had been alienated as a conscious decision by Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, the argument in the Sifrei by the daughters of Selefchad also suggests that all judges, especially in Israel, should be both male and female, and perhaps old and young, convert and born Jew to overcome prejudices, unknown biases. Wow. Okay. So you know that's a big comment, and you know there's 3,000 years of Jewish history intervening between the you know work that I tried to explicate and our contemporary moment. So that's a lot to digest. That being said, right, there's no shortage of heroic and indispensable Jewish leaders who are women, including, right, in the highest positions, you know, judges and prophets. Right? So that's there's no discrimination on that front, in the sense that, you know, their leadership is equally indispensable. Kliyaka writes that Moshe should have chosen women to be spies, citing the daughters of Slavchad love for Israel. You provide another reason why he should have chosen women. Unity, Shukach. Yeah, that's amazing, Kliyakar. Amazing Kliyakar at the beginning of Parsha Shlach, because the pasuk uses the word anashim, and the Kliyakar has a few explanations, but one of them, he says, if Moshe just would have chosen nashim to be spies, so the story would not have gone off the rails, and it would have had a totally different outcome. He says it's because of the inherent love of the land on the part of Jewish women of the course of the Exodus and the years following the Exodus, but maybe there's another level to it here. Source sheet is in the chat, and let's just see if there are. They were generators of kiruv. That's great. Yes, meaning Vatikravna is to become close. That is when we say kiruv, what we mean is to bring people close. And that's exactly what they did. Similar language is used in connection with Pesach Sheni, when the people approach Moshe, but not when Moshe approaches Hashem. Okay, maybe a language of Vayikra. I have to go back and look in Parshas Balosa. I don't have it in front of me. On a midrashic level, the father of the daughters, if he was the Mekoshe, is also brought together, i.e. the Malacha of gathering with. Wow, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, Mekoshe, it's a gatherer, right? Literally, is a gatherer. That's beautiful. That's a great thought. Interesting that Miriam had a similar attribute. Aaron was Ohev Shalom and Rodev Shalom. I guess that ran in the family. Moshe was too stressed with responsibility. Yeah, there's overlap there in the kind of leadership models of Aaron and Miriam. Maybe for another time, but I'll just mention, you know, Miriam has the gift of speech, right? She always has some kind of magic words that, you know, can bring people together, as we saw, especially in that first prakim of Sefer Shmos, and that first, you know, famous Gemara about how she reunited her parents. It's a different quality. And there's actually something about, again, for a larger conversation, if you think about the leadership attempts by Moshe Rabbeinu at the beginning of Sefer Shmos, those three episodes, right? So he tries to intervene in three separate stories. In the first one, he sees a Mitzri beating an Israelite. He intervenes. He kills the Egyptian. Okay, so that's like club him. The second story, he tries to use words to intervene, right? And what happens, right? The two Jews are fighting, and it doesn't work, right? And he's functionally exiled as a result of his attempt to use words, right? And the third story is ambiguous. It just says he drove the shepherds away, presumably with force. But when in the burning bush episode, Hashem says to Moshe, "I want you to lead the Jewish people," and Moshe says, you know, lo dvarim, lo ish dvarim anochi, in seven different ways. He says, right, I'm not a person of words, kvad pek, kvad lashon anochi, right? So it's also from his lived experience, which is, I tried my sister's model to use words to lead, and it didn't work out. So maybe I'm not the right guy. And there's an argument to be made that over the course of his career, right, Moshe had to learn the Miriam model for leadership in order to succeed. When Mashiach comes, do you think women will be given more leadership roles than they were given before? I think I am not qualified to answer that question. How do we justify our morning bracha shalos on Isha? I think I am not qualified to answer that.
Take a pass on that one. We'll have to have a whole shiur on that one. That's okay.
Rabbi Kelman is promising that there's going to be a special shiur devoted to Shalos on Isha.
We don't avoid any issue, but now's the right agree. Another time.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yes, Shikoch, I really want to thank you very much. By the way, Rabbi David Silber does have a talk on the Drisha website where he discusses Aaron Pinchas as a tikkun for Aaron. And he also discusses in that same talk how it's a fulfillment of the bracha, if you want to call it that, of Yaakov Avinu, of Shimon and Levi, to separate them. And by Pinchas killing the Levi, the head of Shevet Levi, that's the separation of the kahuna of the Pinchas and Levi. He puts that in together and he ties it into Chet Egel. Just on that note, from the question before, if anybody want to follow up on that. And I do, if I can add, you know, the one model of leadership that you might have expected that we don't have because it's not a good model is the Pinchas model. We don't want an extremist. There may be a place for extremism, maybe. Not that at some time with all the conditions, Chazal, as we all know, that's for another shiur put on it, but Pinchas can't be the leader. And I think it's instructive that the leadership is chosen in Parshat Pinchas. So the person who would be the natural leader who God gave a Briti Shalom is Dafka, you know, passed over, because I think that's a powerful message that extremism has no place in leadership, which is a moderation is very necessary. And I think in our times, that's especially true. You know, it's always, but anyways. But I want to thank you for the wonderful share. We look forward to having you again in the future, please God. And tomorrow morning, next year, my share, Pirkei Avot, 9:30 a.m. in the morning, 11 a.m. Sunday, Rabbi Liptak continuing on Sefer Dvarim. Monday morning, Alex Israel continuing his share on Lord Jonathan Sachs, his thought, his fascinating series. Tuesday, Rachel Sharansky-Danziger, her series on storytelling and kings. Wednesday, Simi Peters on Sefer Yirmiyahu and Moshe Sokolov on the Haftorah of the Week. Thursday morning, Shuli Mishkin continues her series on tours around Israel. And next Thursday, please God, announcing it here for the first time, we will send out an announcement. Rabbi Rabbi Jonathan Ziering will begin a five-part series on things related to Shemitah and all kinds of rabbinic law and biblical law. As many of you, I'm sure, know, this upcoming year will be a Shemitah year. It's always exciting every 7 years what to do. And those who live in Toronto know Rabbi Ziering well, and those who don't also, they should know him, upstanding young Talmud Chacham. And so please God, that beginning next week, we'll send out the information. And we look forward to learning with you, and be well. Invite a friend always if you enjoyed it. That's the best way. Oh, yes. And of course, our medical ethics, you know, conference, July 11th. That's all day learning, a fantastic program, as we have our 13th annual conference this year online. That's July 11th. David Pelkowitz, Aaron Glatt, Avram Steinberg, Eddie Reichman. It's really, right, even Rabbi Levine's impressed. It's an impressive program. And of course, on Sunday the 18th, we'll have our annual Tisha B'Av program online. We have almost finalized the program. We'll send out details, you know, soon. That'll be pretty much late morning, afternoon, whatever, through the day on Tisha B'Av. So we look forward to learning with you. And thank you very much. And thank you again, Rabbi Levine. A pleasure. And I miss Manhattan. I miss the United States. I have not been able to cross. You know, our borders are still closed. But please, God, in the not too distant futures, they'll open up the borders. So we can actually, you know, drive across and say hello to all kinds of our friends and relatives, etc. Thank you.
We look forward. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Rabbi Levine, that was fantastic. I really enjoyed that.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Very interesting.
Thank you.
Okay, it's worth it to stay in mind. Here are all the thank yous. That's right. Okay. Miksat shvachal lefanav.
Terrific.
And I loved your Dvar Torah on Chazarat Hashatz.
Ah, thank you. Thank you for your comments. I have to fix the notes.
You were fantastic.
It was very nice, but I didn't have the source sheets. I couldn't get them.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
And Rabbi,
how do I get the source sheets?
The source sheets?
Where do you find this?
Yeah, it's on the chat box, but the easy way to go, if you go to the program page on the website at torahandmotion.org, type in programs, you'll see the Parshat HaShavua, and then scroll down. It's long because we put all the, from the beginning of the year, in Bereishit, but if you scroll down, you'll see all the source sheets and all the recordings. So if you want to listen to any of the ones you missed, the recordings and the source sheets are on the website. That's the easiest way to get it. Or you can see it if you take a look on the chat box a little bit earlier and just, you know, click on the link and you'll get it there. In general, that's where all our source sheets are always posted on program pages, and that's where all the recordings are posted.
Thank you. That's excellent. Thank you.
And thank you for inviting people, Rabbi. Ira, if you're still around, nice to see you. Hello. I don't know if he's still around, but the two L. Kelmans family branch. So, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Laila Tov, everybody.